Hello, all of you out there in Radio Land. You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. For our virtual listeners, we hope your device stays locked onto our website, kptz.org. I'm Marianne McNellis, and this show is called Our Town. The show highlights some of the diverse personalities that make Jefferson County, Washington so very special. Our town profiles people from all walks of life, from firefighters to foodies, from bus drivers to baristas, and even the lawyers and the ladies who lunch. With so many interesting people in our community, I rarely reach out to interview someone for a second show, but today is one of those rare exceptions. My guest today is Port Townsend Police Chief Thomas Olson. He's just completed his second year on the job here. He was on Our Town just about a year ago after maneuvering through his freshman year that also happened to be a pandemic. Welcome to the show, Chief Olson.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Year two is quite a different story. This summer, we witnessed boisterous return of tourist season. From a police perspective, there's quite a lot going on. Many of us prefer to look at our town through rose-colored glasses, but yes, we have both crime and drugs here. Perhaps we don't have as much as elsewhere, but we do have it. We also have a chronically understaffed police department like so many other communities. Being a police chief is a complex job, even in a small town. Some of our listeners don't know you right now. Let's start with the simple stuff. Are you a local boy, born and bred on the Olympic Peninsula?
No, I'm not, actually. In fact, I'm not even born in the state of Washington.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in northern Minnesota.
Okay. And was it a big town, small town?
I grew up in a very small town, total population of 332 people. In fact, I had 29 kids in my graduating class.
That is pretty small. And what did your folks do?
My dad worked construction, and my stepmom at the time was a stay-at-home mom, and she supported us kids in our sports programs and everything that we did at school.
Now, some kids are very focused, and even when they're in high school, they have it in their head, I'm going to be X when I get out of high school. Were you like that?
Not really. I just enjoyed my time in school. I was mostly an athlete. I was not big into academics. I knew that at the time, more education or going on to college, because I saw the challenges my sister was having as a college student trying to put her way through. My dad did not make a lot of money working construction. He made enough to support his family and give us a great childhood, but not enough to send us to college and pay for that. So we were pretty much on our own. And so my sister was in college, but I saw the struggles that she was having with working and school and everything. I'm like, yeah, that's probably not for me. So just in conversations with my dad, he always wanted to go in the Air Force, and he wasn't able to during the Vietnam era due to flat feet, and his hearing was not good, so he was not accepted. And so he said if there was one thing that he always wanted to do was to be in the Air Force. And so I decided I was going in the Air Force. And I did that relatively early. In fact, I was halfway through my senior year when I enlisted.
But you didn't drop out of school,
though. No. I was in the delayed enlistment program. So stayed through school. And then I actually went to Alaska for the summer and worked up in Fairbanks, Alaska, and then ended up going in the Air Force in September.
Well, that sounds like a fun summer, even though you were working, but, you know, for a young kid like that to see a whole different place.
Yeah, it was great. Myself and two of my high school buddies loaded up our cars and drove up the Alcan Highway up through Canada and the Yukon and up into Alaska and spent the summer working construction.
Great. And so you came back, and I guess the first thing you did in the Air Force was go to basic. Where were you?
I went to basic training in San Antonio, Texas. That's mm-hmm. the only place the Air Force has basic, so everybody gets the pleasure of going there.
The great state of Texas, okay. And how long did that last?
That was 6 weeks.
And then?
And then I went on to tech school. I went into the Air Force with the idea that I wanted to be an air traffic controller. And then they do all the testing, the hearing, the vision, all the important stuff for that while you're in basic. And I was so focused on just getting through basic that I decided not to go and try to become an air traffic controller. And the Air Force put me into security law enforcement type work. So that's kind of how I got my start in this profession.
And what was your first assignment then?
My first assignment was working in the missile fields in North Dakota.
Okay.
So I was working security out in the missile fields in North Dakota in wonderful weather. But it was our job that when we had alarms, whether they were down inside the missile silo or up on the top, that we would respond out to that site and secure it and address anything that was going on. So.
Okay. And do you have any other assignments in the Air Force?
I was only in North Dakota for about a year, which is pretty unusual. Normally when you go to those bases, you stay there for a while. But I was fortunate enough to get orders to Europe about a year later, and I was stationed in the Netherlands, about 30 minutes out of Amsterdam, in a place called Schusterberg Air Base.
Well, there's an adventure for you.
Yeah, it was, I say, the best base in the Air Force. We had F-15 fighters, and we were in charge of protecting the northern part of Europe and intercepting any planes coming out of Russia. And I was there in the mid-80s, right, during the Cold War.
Great. And how long did you stay there?
I was there about 3 years before I ended up making the decision to get out of the Air Force and pursue something else.
And what was something else?
Well, I only knew really, law enforcement. So I went back to Minnesota. I became a fitness instructor. My sister worked at the corporate office for a chain of fitness centers, and she was able to get me a job as a fitness instructor at one of those. So I was doing that, and I got into some armed security work, kind of preparing me, at least I thought was, getting me some training and things and preparing me to get into law enforcement. I really wanted to be a state trooper, but I wanted to be a Minnesota state trooper, but... When I got back there, the academy had just started, and they weren't looking at another academy for probably a year and a half. And they also required a two-year degree, and I was a few classes shy of that. I had gone to school while I was in the military over in Europe, but shy, so I was going to have to go back to school. And one of the guys that I was working with, the security company, had come out here to Washington and tested with the Washington State Patrol. And he encouraged me to do that. I also had a couple of friends that lived out here from high school in Minnesota, and I talked to them, and they said, hey, come stay with us, use our car. And
so Washington did not have the requirement for the AA degree?
No, they did not.
Okay. Nope. So you came out, tested, and?
Yeah, I flew out, tested on a Friday and a Monday and a Tuesday, and I went back to work in Minnesota on Thursday, and my boss told me that I was probably going to get a phone call from the Washington State Patrol in about a month, and about 30 days later, I got the phone call.
Great. And so you relocated out here, and there's some training, I suppose. How does that work?
Yeah, I came out in October of 1988, started my work with Washington State Patrol as a cadet up in Bellevue, Washington. I was a past cadet on the Snoqualmie Pass for a while, and I worked in that area for about 3.5 months before I started the State Patrol Academy out in Shelton, Washington.
And that's a year or 6 months?
No,
or
it was about, it's like 5 to 6 months total with the field training and everything.
And then you had a real assignment.
Yeah, I graduated from the academy after all my field training, and I was assigned to East Tacoma. So that is basically everything in Pierce County, east of I-5, Puyallup, Sumner, Bonnie Lake, Buckley, Spanaway Parkland, all of those areas, all the way out to Mount Rainier.
So it's got some challenging areas in that turf.
Yeah, back then, the State Patrol was responsible for all the enforcement and collision investigation for all state routes and county roads in Pierce County, east of like McCord and Fort Lewis.
You know, you said something in passing to me the other day that sort of stuck with me. You said, basically, if you think about it, a vehicle is involved in almost all crimes.
That's true. Just about every crime you can think of, people have either have to get there or leave there, or they use it as, you know, part of the crime. And so with the State Patrol, a lot of these things weren't our primary responsibility, but we were almost always involved in some way, whether it was a bank robbery, an assault, or anything. The description of how they got there or how they left was put out, and we were usually involved in some way. So,
well, that makes sense. So how long were you doing that particular beat?
I was there 11 years before I got promoted to sergeant.
And they sent you somewhere else, huh?
Yep. I was fortunate enough to go to North Seattle up near the airport. So I had the south end of King County, I-5 and multiple state routes between Boeing Field down to the Fife area where the Pierce County line is.
And how long were you doing that?
I was there about 2 years before I transferred back to Tacoma, and I was a sergeant in East Tacoma for 10 years after that. And then my last 2 years with the State Patrol, I transferred up to North Seattle, where I worked out of the Roanoke office, which is just north of downtown Seattle. We were responsible for all of I-5 from Boeing Field up to the Snohomish County line.
So why didn't you remain a state trooper?
Well, one of the reasons I chose the State Patrol is it was the retirement system. They have a unique retirement system in that you're able to retire after 25 years of service. And so I was only 48 years old. I knew I wasn't going to fully retire, but with everything that I did with the patrol for a little over 25 years, I was going to collect 60% of my paycheck, whether I showed up or not. So it just made good sense for me and my family to find another job that paid me as much as I was making at the State Patrol and also get my 60%
retirement. Get your 60%.
So it was about a 60% pay raise to leave.
That's an interesting system.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it was one of the benefits, yeah, and one of the things that really a recruitment
attracts
tool
people.
To bring
yeah.
people there, whereas other law enforcement agencies all pay into the same retirement system. And if you continue to work in law enforcement, even at another agency, you still have to pay into that system, and you're not able to actually collect a retirement check until you leave law enforcement.
Okay, so what did you decide to do? I mean, you could have decided to be an architect or whatever.
You know, I'll be honest with you. After 25 years, I thought I wanted to do something different. So I had taken the last 4 years or so of my career, and I really focused on getting my education. The last 4 years I was with the State Patrol, I was in school almost full time. I finished my associate's degree at Pierce College. I then went back and got my bachelor's degree and my master's degrees all in within less than 2 years
wow.
of going to school. So it was a lot of work. It was full-time school. I had two little kids running around under the age of 3, and I was in the military, the Washington National Guard. So I had a lot going on.
Yeah, you're a busy
but,
boy.
But it kept me focused, and I knew that, you know, to leave the patrol and find another good-paying job in law enforcement or something else, I was going to need that education.
What did you get your master's in?
My master's is in organizational leadership.
So good for most anything, really.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did you do next?
While I was up working in North Seattle, I was interviewing for a believe it was a deputy chief position down in Oregon. I met with the chief of police at the University of Washington, and just to find out what campus policing was all about and how different it was. Met with them, and about a week or so later, I reached out to him, and I really thanked him first time, and he said, "Hey, I don't know, you know, how it's going to work out in Oregon, but I'm going to have a lieutenant's position opening up in a month or two. If you're still looking, I'd love you to apply." And
that's
so
nice.
I did not get the job down in Oregon. And so when the opportunity came up at the University of Washington, I applied for it, went through an assessment center, and competed for the position, and was fortunate enough to get selected for a lieutenant's position at the University of Washington Police Department.
In essence, what is the difference between the two jobs, you know, being a state trooper and being on a big campus like that?
State trooper, the primary focus is traffic law enforcement, and then everything else is, an assist. We assist other agencies with other law enforcement related things, but our primary responsibility was traffic law enforcement. So
right.
We did a lot of that. Campus policing, I mean, you're responsible for what you would think would be a small community, but actually the University of Washington had about 72 to 74,000 daily users. And our police department was pretty small to handle that, but we had multiple housing units, apartment complexes. It was in the, you know, kind of the heart of the U District in Seattle. But you also have nearly 1,000 student organizations, so a lot of diversity on campus. So you really had to figure out how you're going to keep everybody safe and have everybody feel safe with all this different diversities and everything to do. So really important part of campus policing is working with those communities.
Yeah, it does sound more like community policing.
Yes, and that's where I really got a strong idea of what that meant, working within your community to get the job done, because you can't do it alone.
Okay, and so how did you transition from UW to the chief of police in Port Townsend?
I learned a lot on campus and in working with organizations and people and groups, and I just kind of brought that philosophy here with me. You know, both my time at the State Patrol and on campus really diversified my thought of what public safety was and is, and I brought that with me here to Port Townsend. And so I look at things a little bit differently, and I really focus on activities that we do that are centered around partnering with groups, organizations, and the community to get our job done and do a better job.
So when you first arrived, what did you identify immediately as the challenges you were facing?
I can't really say that I immediately recognize that, because it took me some time to really get a grasp on the community, how it works. And, you know, for me, it looked like a pretty well-oiled machine when I first got here. And then within a few months, I had retirements, I had people leaving for family reasons, and just the department was shrinking very quickly. And so next thing I knew, I had a department that was about half staffed, nearly 50% of what it should be. So that became my ultimate crisis and challenge.
Well, and it was also a pandemic year, and all police departments across the country, from what I understand, are scrambling to hire people. What did you see as your offerings?
I just took a different approach, and I felt like Port Townsend, although is a really neat place and a lot of people come here to visit, you know, there are challenges with moving here. You're a little off the beaten path. You know, our housing, we've got a housing issue here.
Right.
We have an older community, And so I had to look at, you know, what can I do to bring seasoned officers here, for one, as laterals, and then two, how do I get young officers that are going to spend, you know, the next 20 to 25 years working in a smaller police department, which is a challenge in and of itself.
Well, everyone knows the price of housing around here has really shot up in recent years. How did you help to get around that?
The department's policy was pretty limited on where one could live, and one of the biggest benefits we have and most other agencies have is a vehicle that we can transport all of our equipment in. It's basically our own vehicle. We have assigned vehicles, but the policy really limited on where how far they could take those cars. So officers were living in Sequim. Were living in on the other side of Sequim, closer to Port Angeles, or they couldn't live in certain areas because they couldn't take their car. So officers were parking their car at Discovery Bay at the DOT station and driving their own car there and leaving it there all day. Well, if you're a young family or you only have one car, either your spouse would have to get up and go to work with you every day to have the car, or they don't have that transportation. And so one of the first things I did was I expanded our residency and take-home car policy. So our officers could, especially our younger ones, could find housing, whether it's a new home or something that was within their budget, that met the needs of their family.
So roughly what is the parameter of that?
Well, it was 15 or 18 when I got here, and I've expanded it to 50 miles.
So as long as they live within 50 miles of Port Townsend,
yes.
They're okay. Well, that would probably help, I would think.
Yeah, and so that gets them, to Sequim or to parts of Port Angeles, or one of the other barriers was the bridge.
Yes.
I said that nobody could live on the other side of the bridge. Well, that really eliminated a lot of opportunities. And I really looked at how often the bridge was an issue and going forward, what that would look like. And to me, it was, I'll use an example. Working up at the University of Washington, when I was a lieutenant working patrol, I would drive my car into the city of Auburn. I would get on a train. I'd ride that train to downtown Seattle. I'd get on the light rail. And I take the light rail up to the university, and then I get on a bus and take a bus about 2 miles to my office. I was using four forms of transportation, public
right.
transportation.
So are you staffed up now?
We're doing a lot better. We're not fully staffed. We have two officers in the academy right now, which is real positive. We do have four openings, but that's better than seven or eight. And we've got a person in background, and we have a lot of applications. So fortunately, of all the people I've hired, I lost three in the last year, two that didn't make it through their training, and then one that left for personal reasons. Those things happen. They happen in every department. You can never really anticipate that. But if all three of those people would have made it, we would have been practically fully staffed.
You know, today, looking forward, what do you see as the challenges for the Port Townsend Police Department?
As we get closer to staffing, I mean, we've done a lot of positive things. I brought on a deputy chief. We haven't had a deputy chief here for 10, 15 years. He's doing really good things. I promoted a sergeant this year, so we've expanded that. And staffing is moving in the right direction. The two major things that I'm working on that I've been hoping to work on since I've been here is building the strategic plan and moving into accreditation. And accreditation is a very big commitment, and
right.
we need to be nearly fully staffed to do that.
Okay. Now, nationwide, in the past couple of years, there have been a number of incidents involving the police, George Floyd and others. And no matter where you are in the country, that has some impact. Is there anything you can say about it in particular with the community here?
Well, I think as a nation, there's been a little bit of change that law enforcement has had to deal with, and we're even seeing it here, although on a pretty minute level. But I'll be honest with you, our use of forces is up from last year. We're using more force. That sounds not good, but the amount of force that we're using is pretty minimal. And we're tracking our use of force much greater than we were in the past. I mean, we're documenting. Even if we have to, just hold somebody to put the handcuffs on, we document all of that.
Do we have cameras here?
We do. We have body cams. So all of our officers that are working patrol wear body cams every day.
Well, that's good. Well, I'm getting signals that we're really out of time here, but in closing, I mean, I know you have two teenagers now.
I do.
And athletes taking after their father?
Yep. My son is on the football team, and my daughter is in volleyball right now in the middle school, and they are, they play sports year-round, so.
Well, I think, I've heard other people say that one of the attractions of Port Townsend is the schools, and there are challenges of all schools, but it's not the same as an inner city school, basically.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every school is, there's going to be challenges. But I think that our police department works very closely with the staff of all three of our schools. And so, one of my goals this fall was to get a school resource officer back in place. Haven't been able to do that yet, but we're really close. But we work very closely with the schools on every issue. So,
okay. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the show. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM. I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. My guest today has been Port Townsend Police Chief Thomas Olson. In addition to thanking Chief Olson, I want to thank Sunny Flores, editor and producer of Our Town. Many of you don't realize how important the role of an editor is. They can clean up what we say and make us sound a lot more eloquent than we might. KPTZ is a community radio station by and for the people of Jefferson County. We don't get any funding from any government agency, so we're funded solely by community donations. Please donate now. Many of you already know this, KPTZ is about to move to our new headquarters at Fort Worden. As much as we all love our current world headquarters and a trailer in the parking lot of what was once Mountain View School, it will be fabulous to move to a state-of-the-art studio, even where we have soundproofing. Amazing. In closing, keep your radio, if you're old style, tuned to KPTZ 91.9 FM. If you're online, kptz.org is the place to go. You've been listening to Our Town. Today we feature Port Townsend Police Chief Thomas Olson. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production, created by Marianne McNellis and edited by Sunny Flores.